Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Yes. Hey, welcome back once again. A long-awaited wait there for Tips from the Server Room. This is Tips from the Server Room, and this is episode number 7. Tonight, I thought we would do this a little bit differently. We are doing a live Tips from the Server Room instead of just a podcast here. We are recording as a podcast, so if you're listening to this, I'd like to tell you that we're going to try to run this show at 8:30 on Tuesday nights. That's 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Tuesday evenings, I'm going to try to record these. I'm going to be getting more in-depth from Tips from the Server Room because I really think that people out there need to learn more about your servers, and you need to be more in touch with those servers and be able to work with the server. Not only the server, though. We're going to talk about your networks in general. We're going to talk about workstations and what we need to do with those to keep those operational and fully functional. And we're going to talk about adding new things into your network. I think that's very, very important. Also, just to mention here to start off this evening, the website, if you want to check out our website, if you've never been there before, it's tipsfromtheserverroom.com. It's very easy to remember, right? Just like the show, tipsfromtheserverroom.com. And if you're listening to this on iTunes, please click the subscribe button, subscribe to these shows so you can pull down the new ones. If you're watching me here this evening on Justin TV, I can tell you that the chat room is available. So if you have any questions during this show, you can throw it in the chat room. You can also catch me on Skype. And if you want to Skype in, the Skype name is Jack's Tech Corner. You can also call us at 724-701-0911 if you have questions within the show. Now, if anybody out there wants to email the show, by all means, you can do that at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. That's how you get a hold of the show to throw some questions in there at me and, check that out. The best way to sponsor these shows is you can either give donations to the show, as always. People do accept donations. Or sign up for one of my online classes. If you go to jackstechcorner.com and click on the very top link, it'll say online classes. And I teach Windows Server 2008 R2 and Windows Server 2012 online. And those courses run self-paced, and you watch a video, basically. It's all video-oriented, so you watch a video, and then you take a short quiz. Once you complete the course, I do mail you a really nice certificate there, so you can hang it on your wall or put that with your resume. That's always a good thing to have, so that's something you want to think about. Anyway, that's the best way to sponsor the shows. And a little bit about my background, if you've never heard before about my background. I've been a systems admin now for about probably roughly 15 years, I guess. I've been in the computer industry about 27 years total. So there you have it. Very, very long time. I started with Windows Server, believe it or not. Windows Server for work groups. Wow, that was quite a while ago. Then we went to Windows Server 3.1 for work groups. Then we went to Windows Server NT, and then 2003, 2008, and now 2012. So it's hard to believe how many different versions of server there have been out there over the years. I have ran the Linux servers, but I've basically ran that for the Apache, for the web services. So I'm not in touch or as in touch I like to be with the Linux stuff, but if by all means, if you want to touch base with me sometime and ask me a question, I'll check it out for you and see if we can figure it out together if you're running Linux servers. But I do like it for Apache. I think it's number one for web servers. We run a lot of IIS at our business, and where I'm a system admin, and we have 700 nodes or 700 workstations. And now we're just introducing 150 Chromebooks into that network. So it's a rather big network. So that's about my background there. I just wanted to throw that out there to you. I started this podcast a while ago. You know, we're only on episode number 7, so I haven't done any for a while. And I think with any podcast, you get into a roadblock. You get into something that says, just don't know if I can go on doing shows, because I was doing like 6 shows a week and it was getting to be a lot of work. But I do love being a systems admin, and I do love teaching this stuff, and I like spreading the word out there to you folks. So the online courses are doing well, so I thought I would go ahead, and at this point I'm going to give back to the community there with some free podcasts. So anyway, but I am broadcasting live on Justin TV tonight. So if you're listening to the podcast, catch us on Justin TV on Tuesday nights at 8:30. I'll be back here, and we'll be doing another show next week, and we'll see how they go, if I can keep up on this. Your questions will definitely benefit the shows. You know, if you throw questions in about your networks, about what's happening in your network, wireless, I know a lot about wireless. We've been doing a ton of new wireless. So, you know, if you have questions about that, firewalls, or throw those in there, because that will help maintain the shows, and that will help me bring you new content. I think that's very important. Tonight I thought I would do a show because I've been having a lot of questions come back from my YouTube videos. So if you've seen me on YouTube, you know I've taught Windows Server 2008 on YouTube with a couple introductory videos to 2012. And I get questions back from those, and I thought that would be really great to bring a show based on those questions. And tonight we're going to talk about something that so many people put so much emphasis on and makes it so hard to do, that they almost make it impractical to do this stuff. And what we're talking about this evening is we're going to be talking about IPs, somewhat about IP subnetting. And I want to bring this to you because I want you to understand IPs and IP subnetting and how that works. So I'm going to just start off here with the first question that came out of the YouTube videos. And we're going to try to, let's see here. We're going to try to just bring this up here. I'm just trying to read over this question so I know how to present it to you folks out there. All right, so let's get started. It says, hi, Jack, I have a question for you. Please, can you show me through a video, which I haven't done the video, but how to assign a Class C IP address in DHCP server? It's for my project. I would appreciate if you would send me an email ID. I need to create 2 scopes of Class C networks for 500 computers. Now, right there's already an issue, and we're going to go over that. We're going to talk about why that's an issue. The main reason that's an issue is if you have a Class C network, all right, you're putting this on your DHCP server. So you're putting a scope on your DHCP server. And that scope, if it's a Class C, is going to be 254 addresses, okay? So in reality, you would think if you have 2 of them, you could serve up 500. But I found that it's easier at that point to just bring up, maybe you want to bring up a Class B network. Now, I say that because we're going to be able to maintain more IP addresses within a straight scope of addresses. You're not going to have .10s, .20s, and .10s, and .20s, and we're going to talk about that. So my philosophy is let's roll back a little bit. When I first went to my current job and I looked at the first DHCP server, because you know you want to get a grasp of your servers to know what you have going on there. So what I wanted to do first of all was to see how many IP addresses they were giving out. And when I looked at that, it was a Class A network. And I thought, I can never manage or maintain a Class A network. Who in their right mind would do that? But working for a school system, there's so many computers, and now, even more so now, because we're going to be doing a BYOD, or bring your own device, what's going to happen there is we're going to need as many available IP addresses as we can get. You don't want to really have to manage that or raise it. Or I did that when I owned my own ISP. We would add more modems. We would add another bank of IPs, and that got to be really, really old really fast. It's easier just to set your IP addresses when you build your server and let it roll. You know, we could talk about leasing, and I'll mention that tonight and how that works with the DHCP server. And how easy it is to lease those out and have those end, and we'll talk about the different scenarios that you're going to run into. First of all, let's go ahead, and we are going to talk about IP subnetting. And I wanted to start out, I think I got it here actually in my notes, we're going to start out talking about how many hosts you can have with the 3 different subnets, okay? Or classes. There's Class A, Class B, and Class C. Now, of those three different classes, Class A being the largest, and we actually took our Class A and we subnetted it, and I'll talk about that, but actually you can have, it says actually you can have 65,536 hosts, and you would actually can go up to, now this is going here, let me see if I can read this, 16,772,214 hosts you can actually have if you start breaking that down. But we're just going to go straight out. We're just going to say straight hosts would be 65,536. Now, with that said, if you go to a Class B network would give you between 256 hosts and at 65,534. So you can have a total of that many hosts. Now, if you just have a Class C network and you put that on your DHCP server, you're going to be able to actually have 254 hosts. But I'm very old school, and I think I talked to you before about this. And what I mean by old school is I still believe that there's a broadcast address, and then I never use the first address. So if you look at that, that would give us 252 usable addresses. That's what I usually go by with any of my classes. Take one in the beginning off and one at the end for a broadcast. And even many people say that's kind of old school and a lot of networks don't do that anymore, but what the heck, you might as well just save those. And talking about that, when you're setting up your Class C network, here's something else to remember, folks. If you have servers out there, we have a lot of managed switches in our network at this point. I like to give all those addresses. And, you know, you want to make it as a static address. So what you would do actually is take that, you would take your DHCP server and you're going to say, look, on that DHCP server, what we're going to do is we are going to set up reservations. You can reserve them. Or what I like to do is just set them in there so it doesn't. I exclude the addresses. And I exclude, let's say if we use the 10.16 addresses. No, let's go 192.168. So if I use 192.168.1 and I would exclude .1 or .2 to 192.168.1. Let's say 100. So I take that first bank of addresses and hold those off so they're never handed out. And the reason I like to do that is, like I said, I use those for my switches, your network printers, and as well as your servers. You need those addresses to not be handed out, because you don't want somebody to go to access a printer and you found out that its IP address changed because you were allowing it to pick it up off of DHCP. Very bad practice. All right. Now we said we would go back in and we're going to talk a little bit about the lease time. So when you're working on your DHCP server and you go into your server DHCP settings and you look in there and there's a lease time. Now, some people, or well, people have different opinions of this also. The first thing is, you're talking about the DHCP handing out an address and how long do you want that address to stay active with that certain device. Now, if you have laptops coming in your network and going out of your network, let's say you work for a pharmaceutical company where you have your reps, your drug reps coming into your building for meetings or whatever, but they're mostly on the road. When they come into your building and they plug in, they get an IP address, obviously, from your DHCP server. But if you allow that address to hang, some people I've seen put in there for 30 days, 160, 120 days. I've seen crazy things. We do ours basically by a 24-hour increment. And the reason we do that is when that laptop leaves, in 24 hours, if it doesn't see that actual MAC address come back on your network, that IP address will go back into your bank and be reusable again. That way those addresses aren't getting locked out there, and then you get this big address table, right? And all these addresses are being hung out there, but those devices really are not on your network any longer. So that's one way to look at that. The other way to look at it is, if you have your devices and they're on your network all the time, you could set it to, you know, a couple days. Because it's not going to matter. When it sees that device turned on in the morning, it's going to get the same address. That makes it easier for your end as a network admin, because your DNS server is not going to have to work as hard to maintain those IP addresses coming into it to actually set up your computer name to resolve to that IP address. It's not going to change every day because we use dynamic DNS, which means as the address is seen on a MAC address, it gets written to the DNS server, and you type in Betty's computer, and Betty's computer will come up because it'll resolve it to the proper IP address. Now, with that same note, there was something else here that we actually talked about, and that is, I had this other question. Let me see here if I can find it. Let me see here. I know I got it in here somewhere. Here's another one for you. Now, this is talking about VLANs. Now, VLAN is a virtual local area network. We VLAN for the reason of security. That's the main reason I could think to do VLANs. Some people tell you also it is to control traffic. Now, the VLAN itself, what's going to happen there is as the network traffic is going through your switch, you break that switch up into different virtual LANs. Again, it's to control traffic and for security reasons. If you have a group of, say, your finance department on your VLAN, what happens is your other staff members, say your drafting department, if you're working for a drafting firm, would not see those finance computers because they're on their own little virtual area network. So here was another question that we picked up recently was, if I have a VLAN and I'm using sub-interfaces on my router, how do I configure my DHCP server so that my client computers can obtain an IP address for the appropriate VLAN? Now, there is a problem right there, and I responded back to this gentleman stating this problem. What he wanted to do was on the DHCP server have different scopes, 172.16.0.10 and 172.16.0.20. All right. And he wanted to take those and say, well, if this VLAN computer registers with this switch, I want it to have this address. If this computer over here registers with the DHCP server, I want to have that address. Well, folks, a DHCP server is not that intelligent. A DHCP server says, look, it's a dynamic hosting service. It wants to hand out IP addresses, which it'll do very well. But those IP addresses are just in a scope. All right. The best you can do there, and I referred this to him, was we take our VLANs and we do static addresses. So we'll give them a static address. We go to our DHCP server and we do a reservation. And we reserve the MAC address to a certain IP address range. You could do that, and that would work very well. Because whenever that MAC address is turned on, it gets the same IP every single day. It's very, very easy to do that, and it works very well. Now, again, you're just working with a standard class of IP addresses. Take your pick, class A, class B, or class C. Now we do, as I said, we run a class A network on our DHCP server. And we have all those addresses out there for that scope. But when I go into my firewalls and I go into my routers, what I do is I subnet those down to class C networks because it's more manageable. But even if it's in the class C network, it's still maintaining the same subnet. And what I mean by that is, it's still 192.168.0.0 is the basic subnet, but all the addresses for class A will work. So if I use a class C and I subnet it, I got 192.168.1.1, 192.168.2.1.3.1.4.1.5.1. And it gives me that bank of 252 addresses off of each one of those scopes. The reason we do that, and I don't really want to get into that too deep here tonight on this particular podcast. We will talk about it in the future. But the reason we do that is because when we put that through our firewall and we run it through a NAT or NET network address translation table, we put that through there, and when I subnet those down, I can use 6 to 10 different routable IP addresses, and it controls my traffic better. My throughput on my firewall has increased amazingly. When we had one IP address, most people tell you a NAT needs one IP address, and then whatever IPs you want to throw at it, it will translate and it will go out and get that data and bring it back. Believe me, folks, if you subnet it down, it's going to be a lot faster. And we'll talk about that one night and how that works and kind of dig into that a little bit. So anyway, we are moving up, moving on here. So again, if you have any questions, we are going to wrap up this show this evening. And if you have any questions in the future, by all means, drop me an email at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Also, we'd love to have you join me here for the live show on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can find that on justin.tv/jackstechcorner. Remember, you can Skype, so if you have some questions, you might want to call in during the show. That would make it even more interesting to interact with you during the show. And I would really enjoy if you would do that. Or, like I said, just send your questions via email to that jackstechcorner@gmail.com. Also, if you're into Windows Server 2008 or 2012, check out the online courses. A lot of people already have. I've been getting a lot of positive reviews, and that's great. I also have ESXi 5.2, I believe it is now. And that class is online for you to take, and you can learn all about virtualizing your servers. I actually purchased a server at the house to design that class, so that class is doing very well. So it is there for you. Once again, folks, I'd like to thank you very much for joining me here on Tips from the Server Room. And I will talk to you next week for another Tips from the Server Room. Thank you so much for joining me here and listening to the podcast, and good evening. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.